Welcome to another episode of The Suspendables with funny man Jungle Jim Jerome and retired NHL star Russ Cortinel.
Here's Cortinel. He scores! Cortinel feeding in.
Each week they unleash their raw, stripped-down, unfiltered opinions on all things hockey and maybe other stuff too. Who knows? Inside stories, absolutely. Outrage, guaranteed. Offside, for sure. And always plenty of laughs. Strap in. The Suspendables is coming at you right now.
Drink away.
Here we go, baby. That laughter can only mean one thing. What does it mean? Oh, yeah, we're starting another show of The Suspendables. Welcome, everybody. It's Jungle Jim Jerome coming at you with a weekly podcast with me and Russ Cortinel that we've been doing for, I don't know how many shows now, Rusty. We might be up over 80.
We're over 80, yeah.
Yeah, and someone asked me the other day before we talk about what's on the show. We got a very exciting guest coming up. I know he's already there. Oh, he's getting up, okay? We have video when we do this, folks. It's Zoom. You only get the audio. Back to reload, okay? Back to reload.
Just had to get my wine. Sorry.
Don't know if you can. We're going to introduce him in a sec. Say that again, and we'll see if people can guess your voice. Go ahead. Say that again.
I just went to get my wine.
Poured it through his five hole.
If I had a dime for every time someone poured their wine through my five hole, oh, my God, I'd be a zillionaire. Someone asked me the other day, Rusty, we love to do a bunch of shout-outs, which we're going to do. We get emails. You can email us at thesuspendables@yahoo.com. And we love to read them. We love to get your comments. And we got shout outs every week, Russ, that I can't get away from now.
Okay, oh, boy.
We got thousands of people, hundreds at least. Okay, 20 people. Okay. Who are listening as far away as Japan. We got another guy in Vladivostok. Okay. All the washed up NHLers know where Vladivostok is because they have to go over there and play in the KHL. So they all know that. But someone asked me how the podcast started, how you and I got together, how we know each other. And well, the quick story is I met Rusty, I don't know, years and years ago, like I met our guests, like I met a bunch of guys in the NHL, all the guys who were born in the 60s. Okay. That's my ring of friends. Okay. And, you had a friend of yours, Bill Yeady, who wanted to get in the podcast game. He asked you to do a hockey one. And you said, yes, but only if my buddy Jimmy does it.
Yep. Can't do it without him.
Can't do it without him. So that's
fuck, was that a mistake?
Anyway, it's another show. We're gonna. I don't know what we're going to talk about. I guess it's a big week because hockey is going to crank up. But, you know, when I met you, Rusty, I might have known a little before you that I met our guest. We got history. We go back to the Ottawa days. I went to high school and university in Ottawa. He's from there. His wife is from there. And of all the guys I've met, he's just one of the most genuine, happiest, lovable, coolest guys that I've met in all your friends, Rusty.
Yeah.
I go back, and I'm talking about the one and only Dave Lumley. It's great to have Dave.
You're such an asshole.
Making me laugh. I'm talking about the one and only Darren Pang. How are you, Panger?
I'm doing fantastic. I'm doing great. And I've been told by many people that Russ Cortinel's one of the greatest people that they've ever met. So to be lumped into that category, Jimmy, I'm honored to be on this unbelievable show. It's an award-winning show. It's got medals and trophies nowhere to be found, but it's a really good show.
This will take us over the top. I fell in love with you, Panger, the first time I heard you laugh. That's where I forget where it was. I said, the guy's got the greatest laugh in the world. He's just the all-time greatest guy. So thanks a million for coming on, Panger. It's as a host of a show, I'll tell you what, it's a dream come true to have a guy like you on, because when I don't, we've had other guys on. We've had Pat Burrell on, okay, from he's a Major League Baseball player, Pat the Bat. We had Steve Lowry on. You would know his name because you're a golf lover. And all those guys, I panic. I got to sit down and go through freaking Wikipedia all day. I got to pull up stats. I don't know Pat Burrell. I got to pretend I know him. And so that's how I've worked my whole life. But with you, Panger, I woke up this morning and went, my job's done. Just flip the mics on and let's go. Okay. I sent him one text, Rusty, last week. I said, we got to get you on. He got back to me right away. And I said, bring some stories. He said, I hope you got about 3 hours, pal. I hope you got about 3 hours to do it. So great, great to have you on, Panger. First of all, let's start now and then go backwards in your life. What are you doing now? Where you hold up? You've lived in Phoenix. You're from Ottawa. Played in Chicago.
Let him answer the fucking question.
Attaboy, Rusty.
Rusty, this is not Oprah, okay? I'm running the show here, okay? It's not. You don't get to just weigh in, okay? Like a stupid, torn-down member of a live audience, all right? I'm handling this ship, baby.
You're doing a great job, too.
Glug, 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 glug. That's me drinking seawater.
Yeah.
Well, I'm in St. Louis right now, and I work. This is my 12th year. It's unbelievable that I'm 12 years now with the Blues and Fox Sports Midwest.
Unbelievable.
Man, it was not long ago, Jimmy, the Arizona, after working for 13 years with ESPN, I got a phone call from Cliff Fletcher and Mike Barnett and said, would you be interested in coming to Arizona? We got a special coach. We can't tell you just yet who's going to be coaching that team, but with ESPN losing the rights, would you want to go there? And I told my wife, my kids, my son is a really good golfer. He's a golf pro now in New Jersey. And I'm like, guys, I think we got a chance to go to, you know, to Arizona and work with the Coyotes. And I don't know who the coach is going to be, but it sounds like it's going to be a big deal. And so obviously it was a big deal. We'll go back to that in a little bit, but that was the most fun I've ever had in my life. The 4 years of broadcasting in Arizona. But then when that was kind of going downhill and we knew that there was going to be some financial ramifications, whatever, John Davidson kept calling me and he's like, big boy. And you guys know JD, big boy. He says, big boy.
Hilarious guy too.
Yeah. Oh, he's a great man. And he's just like, would you want to come to St. Louis? And I said to him, I said, man, JD, I can't work for the St. Louis Blues. And he said, why not, big boy? And he says, I'm the president. And
it's like Groucho Marx.
Yeah. You know, and you guys know him because that's the way he talks. And he's so, so gregarious. Anyway, he says, I end up saying, I can't. And he goes, why not? And I go, why? I played for the Blackhawks. The Blackhawks and the Blues, they hate each other. And all he said was, don't kid yourself, big boy. You weren't that good. And, you know, and then, a few months went by and I brought Lynn here to St. Louis. And at one point I was doing so many games for ESPN and I was here in St. Louis a lot. I got the Central Division or the Norris Division or whatever it was at the time. And so our kids came. We spent a Thanksgiving. We had some fun here. And next thing you know, I take the job here. Now it's 12 years later, and my daughter graduated from Mizzou. She's got a one and a half, 1 year old baby girl named Charlie that they live 15 minutes from us. And my son went to Mizzou for a little bit, but then he went off and went to New Jersey and married a Jersey girl. And he's got a 6 month old baby girl as well. So it's funny. It's a leap of faith on JD's part. Certainly, mm-hmm. It was a leap of faith on mine. I'm thinking this could crumble in a hurry. But it's worked out great. And I had a chance to be part of their only Stanley Cup and it's been a fun ride, guys. It's been really unbelievable. So that's what I've been doing now.
Well, you're the best in the business. So I bet there's a lot of guys who are looking for analysts, for their hockey clubs who missed the boat, Panger. There's no doubt about it. You know, when you read about you, Darren, as I was flipping through
with big font or little font.
Big font. Look at this. It's just crazy, right? I got a new fucking printer.
Billboard. Just...
So you were good, Panger. You were really good. You were a really good hockey player growing up. You go back to your Ottawa days when you were 15. I think, did I read today, you won the I think it was called the Air Canada Cup with a bunch of guys that made it into the NHL that you played with. You ended up playing for Brian Kilray.
I think Killer picked Rusty to play on that 83-84 World Junior Championship team. Am I not mistaken? Right, Rusty?
I did play on that team.
I practiced with you guys at the Civic Center for 4 days. Resuming play from a torn MCL. And so Killer said, Pang, you got to get on the ice and be good for you with all the guys and stuff like that. And
yeah, too bad you weren't healthy. You would have been on that team.
Oh, I was at that point. I was ready to go, and I remember thinking because I played against Alan Bester because I was in the Ontario League and he was in Brantford. I never played against Ken Reggett. Didn't know Kenny at all, but I you know he was a high draft pick and I was never drafted. But man, it was great for me to be on that ice with you guys and scrimmage with you. I think it was for 2 days before you took off.
Yeah,
It was fun.
My favorite killer story, which there's a million, right? He's from Ottawa. And I, of course, Stevie and I did that show in Ottawa, right? But my all-time favorite of all the shit I heard about Killer, the best one, and I'll give you the Cole's Notes version, the short version, was the mother who was standing outside of the bus while her kid was loading. It was 67, loading onto the bus, okay? So she's dropping her kid off. They're going on a road trip. And Killer's there puffing away on a giant stogie, okay?
Never saw that before.
Yeah, never saw that. And he's sitting in the front seat of the bus and he's whipping away on this stogie, okay, drilling it back. And the mother gets on the bus and says, can I talk to you for a second? Absolutely. You know, she says, coach, can I talk? She goes, listen, I think it's probably in everyone's best interest. I can't speak for all the parents, but maybe I can. That it's not very good that all these kids are on the bus getting secondhand cigar smoke from you. And Killer pauses and goes, I think you're right. And it's good for you for looking after the interest of your own son. I think he's the second row in the back there. If you want to go get him, you can take him off and you can go home. No, that's a true story because I've checked it out. But
there's probably a few other words that went along with that.
Yeah. Oh yeah, well he's yeah yeah
yeah yeah.
Every but second word was
he had to turn down the music in front though too. Don't forget he had the 8-track cassette going on in the front of that bus too. Oh my goodness, yes. Well, by that time it was a cassette recorder, and then it was, you know, but old school music of Brian Kilray was the best. But I tell you what, and Quartz would know this. If you couldn't pass the puck, you couldn't play for Brian Kilray, huh, Quartz? If you couldn't heel the toe a saucer pass and it had to be this high over the ice and over a stick, if you could not do that even as a goalie, you can't play. I'm just telling you right now, Courtnell, you can't play.
Yeah. And I had the pleasure, obviously, of playing for him for that, you know, 2, 3, 4 weeks, whatever it was. And that's where I started practicing every day. Heel to toe, saucer pass, saucer pass, saucer pass. He would have the drill. We'd go up and down, and you'd have to saucer it the width of the rink. And 80% of the guys on the team in the World Juniors couldn't do it. By the end of the tournament, we got better. Obviously, we didn't win, but man, he was a passing perfectionist.
Yes, that's awesome. Exactly right. He was a stickler for great passing.
Oh.
Yeah, you're right.
So Panger, I was his captain that World Junior Championships, and he goes, Rusty, curfew tonight's 10:30. Actually, make it 10. You check the room and meet me down in the bar at 10:30, and we'll go over. I want to hear who's in, who's out, and we'll have a couple beers together. So I would go down there every night having a couple beers with him. And I felt at first I felt guilty. And then afterwards it was just freaking awesome. It was
That's great.
And the other guys, and his brother or uncle was on that trip. Who would that have been? Brother?
No, it was Uncle Gordy Ham.
That's right. It was Uncle.
There you go.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
For sure. Yeah. It was Gordy Ham for sure. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Why try and take on an NHL analyst, Jimmy, on facts? Okay, what are you doing here? Okay, Rusty and I just throw names out there. No one ever questions it. You know, it's like he played with Prince Andrew. That was the guy who traveled on the team. You know, I just throw a bunch of shit out there. I knew when I was trying to think how to lay out the show with you. I knew this thing could take 2 or 3 hours and be fantastic because you bring up Killer. And when I hear that name, he's still alive, Brian. He works. I think he's a part owner of Chances Are Restaurant. Remember that restaurant?
That's exactly Pang? Right. That's where I meet him every time I go back for the summertime. It's either there or over at the golf course. Yep.
Yeah. And he's playing. He goes in, I think, 2 or 3 times a week, and he's a host. He seats people at the table and stuff. How did that guy, Panger? You've been around a million coaches. You study them and all that stuff now through your job. How did Brian Kilray last so freaking long coaching?
Well, I think players wanted to play for him. They didn't want to disappoint him. That's kind of number one. The other part that I've always been fascinated by, because so many coaches do not have this ability. Mike Keenan, as an example, the ability.
Hang on. Next subject. Tick. Mike Keenan. I got that. Okay.
The ability to it's your player. You know, it's your player. Your job is to build that player up and give that player confidence, especially at the age of 16, 17, 18, and 19, or whatever it might be. I mean, in life, And he, for me, was the best because I was a cocky son of a gun. And, but I also lost confidence and gave up crappy goals. And, but his ability when I was really down and bring me way up, it could be one save in the third period of a 4-1 game that meant nothing, that the next day he'd tell people, that's a great save by Peng. He doesn't make that save. We don't win the game. And then next thing you know, you're just, your confidence is raising a little bit. And then if you got a little too full of yourself, which happens and happened for sure for me or for all of us, I think Rusty that played in the NHL, we're all probably full of ourselves at times. And he would knock you down and he'd try to get you to that area there. And I don't know. There's so many coaches that just don't get that part of it. They just find a way to be miserable and throw you under the bus and get that bus going forwards and backwards. And then you're done. And it's miserable. You hate life. But he made me, I just couldn't wait to go to the rink. We played ball before. We were more a cup winning team in 84, but in 83, we had a really good team as well. I think maybe Oshawa won that in Portland. Anyway, I don't know, but we lost to Oshawa. And they had a great team, but we had a really good team. And every before practice, I think practice might've been at maybe 3:30, 4:00. At 2:00, all us guys were like, we're going to the rink, 2:00, get on your, our sneakers. We had the nets board to board, not end to end, board to board. Adam Creighton played goal. Brad Shaw played goal in one end. I was always a forward. I had my own pattern. I was a dangler. I would have had the Russ Courtney right-handed pattern, toe dragons, playing. And we would have so many feisty games before our practices. We'd hear Killer come from his office on the one side, and all we hear is, "Pug, you guys, get in the locker room. Pug. Save your energy. We got, and so sure enough, we'd get going and then we'd end up in the room, get our skates on, get back on the ice. But he loved it. He still talks about it to this day. Our camaraderie on that team, our competitiveness was through the roof. I'm telling you, Adam Creighton and Brad Shaw would get going. All of a sudden, Bruce Cassidy's scrapping with them. And we were so feisty before our practices. I think that's what made us a really good hockey team. So it was just so much fun. It was a great part. He saved my life because I was in the dumps in Belleville, in the dumps. I mean, in the dumps. I didn't know whether I was going north or south or east or west or what feet were in front of me. I just didn't want to play. I hated the game. And then he traded for me and he just gave me life again. So I'm forever thankful.
A reminder, you can follow the Suspendables on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and YouTube. And check out our new website, thesuspendables.ca.
How about you, Panger? Okay. I didn't realize you were up for the Calder Cup 1 year, Rookie of the Year, when Joe Nieuwendyk won. Did you know that?
Yeah, I knew that, but it's only because I flashed out the glove a couple of times in Toronto Maple Leaf Gardens, and Rusty was coming down the wing and I gave him the old five. Yeah, I gave him the glove and I just took it away and made it really dramatic. I put some mustard on it and I scooped it up and then I gave it back. And I can show you the video later if you want to, Jimmy.
We'll get that. Yeah, we'll do. And six assists.
I've already shown it to Rusty though. Rusty? I sent it to you, didn't I?
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Huh? I can tell you how he got the six assists.
Real fact, by the way. He's got nine. I think it says you got 9 points altogether in the NHL and you got six assists 1 year.
That's correct.
Right? So yes. Dougie Wilson and Denny Savard had a set play and it would start behind the net in Chicago and frickin' Denny would take off and everybody watching Dougie Wilson behind the net. And all of a sudden Dougie would shoot this pass up the middle of the ice. And Denny would go in on a breakaway and freaking score all the time. How many times did you assist on a Denny Savard, Doug Wilson goal, Panger?
A lot.
Well, six.
For sure.
Yeah. Lot. But isn't true? Like that. Six, remember that play? Remember that play? It was unbelievable. He'd get us every freaking time, although we were the lowly Leafs at the time. So
yeah, but you know what, Rusty? People forget about how great some of these players were. And I think as time goes on, like when you played against Doug Wilson, and I was lucky enough, again, another former 67, played for Killer. So he really looked after me. But on the ice, like he had a presence about him. Like I know he didn't wear a helmet and all that, but there was something about number 24 on that ice. He got that puck and he was one of the best. For me, he was one of the best 60 or 80 foot passers that I'd ever seen in my life. I'd never seen a guy get behind the net and zip it up the ice and go tape to tape like he went tape to tape with Savvy. But that did happen. Do you guys remember the one goal? And I think they just showed it on maybe NHL Network here in the States. They showed the greatest goals. Maybe it was on NHL.com. And one of the goals was we were at home against Edmonton, and it was the heyday of the Oilers. It was the 87-88 season. And Savvy shorthanded, deked around everybody. Like everybody.
Yeah, unbelievable.
Do you remember that play?
Oh, fuck. Unbelievable.
Well, it's funny. This was at the very end of the period. And by the time he scores and puts the puck around Kevin Lowe under his stick with one hand, and then he beats Grant Fuhr. I think he beat. So Fuhr's a Hall of Famer. Lowe's a Hall of Famer. Anderson's a Hall of Famer. Gretzky's a Hall of Famer.
Yeah. Yari Curry.
Oh my God. Five Hall of Famers. So, right. So he beats them all. The place goes nuts. Goal scored by number 18, Denny Savard. Place goes crazy. Assisted by number 40, Darren Pegg. So one of mine was that one there because I must have chipped the puck up to him, and then he was off and running. Oh my God. So
that's awesome. Oh my God. Denny Savard and Dougie Wilson. What a combination. And now that you've kind of made me start thinking about Dougie.
Well, I'm glad I could get some of that wine out of your cranium.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. But he kind of, back then, wouldn't you compare him to like a Nick Lidstrom? Like if you were to compare Dougie to a modern day defenseman?
Yeah.
I mean, not a tough, I agree. Not like Dougie was strong, not going to fight. I mean, he probably could because he was a big guy, but the way his presence on the ice defensively and offensively, I would say that's kind of who I would compare him to.
Yeah, his gap closure. He's just fundamentally so good. I mean, pass the puck and a heavier shot from the point, and maybe not as good defensively as Nick, because Nick was just incredible. But I'm really glad that the Hall of Fame came back to several players and said, let's revisit a few players. Like I always thought that they'd revisit Steve Larmer. And you always lean towards the guys that you played with and go, man, that Steve Larmer was so unheralded and such a great player. But then Doug Wilson, for me, when they started naming a couple of other names, I'm like, well, why not Doug Wilson? I don't get why not Doug Wilson, you know? So I'm glad they went back to that and did pick him. It's too bad that it's during this year. He'll get to celebrate it next year, but he's a good man, and he's always treated his former teammates really well. So he's a good man.
The player they're missing too, besides Larms, is Neil Broughton. Neil Broughton was one of the best American players ever. Was 100-plus point centerman, and then they turned him into a two-way player. Won a Stanley Cup
in Jersey.
He played the point on the power play during that run. The guy's phenomenal, and if Guy Carboneau, who I played with, and I played with Neil, those two, I think they both deserve to get in. Carbo's in now for his defensive abilities. But to take a 100-point centerman and turn him into a checking centerman, and he's the best, one of the top guys in the league. I mean, the guy's a phenom. They should recognize him for everything he did, not, you know, that he stopped getting the points he got. I mean, I had my two of my best offensive years playing on the checking line with Neil Broughton. I had 79 and 80 points.
That's unbelievable. Unbelievable.
Yeah, he's that good. And Carbo deserves it, but Neil Broughton deserves to be in.
Besides the goal he scored against Trechak to pull it, just the fact that he got Trechak out of the game in 1980 with that goal, that's enough for me. How that coach yanked Trechak out of that game, that was it for me. So you're right. Broughton, that was Broughton, right? Or was that Mark Johnson?
Yeah, Neil. I don't know if it was Johnson or Broughton. I don't remember
back
that.
My history. Either one. Yeah. But I love Neil Broughton. I thought he was a great player.
Panger, Rusty and I have done multiple shows now. I think 80-plus shows, coming up to 100. I've never heard him so excited. I'm going to just go lie down, and you guys just carry on, okay? The two of you? All right. Well, this is great. This is great stuff. Before we talk about vomiting before each game that you played,
ooh,
Panger. Okay. Is this true? Did you puke before every game?
I did. I'm not going to lie. You ask any of my players. It's funny that, because you know what? Rusty played with Bob McGill. So we made a trade in training camp of 87. Bob Pulford, I'll give you another. So Bob Pulford's sitting at the big table. We're heading training camp. And we just made a trade. We just made a trade with the Toronto Maple Leafs, and we got Bobby McGill and
is he a horse?
Ricky Vibe and Stevie Thomas. So remember that trade?
Yeah. Oh, did I ever?
And so we ended up getting Big Daddy, and Bob McGill would, especially when we played, you know, Detroit or St. Louis and the, you know, and Toronto, the tough teams going back, but he'd go in the bathroom and he'd always be putting the Vaseline on his, especially where he got cut a couple of times on Rusty.
Yeah.
He had this one spot where he always wanted to above his cheekbone. So he'd be rubbing the Vaseline. And when I finally made it to the NHL, you got to remember I played 3 years in the minors and never thought I'd get a chance. And then next thing you know, you're there and the pressure is really overwhelming, especially at Chicago Stadium. It's hard to explain. Oh, being a goaltender in any place is not easy, but the stadium was a little different. I just got really nervous. I couldn't eat. I woke up in the morning. I just felt it. But I was always like that. I always a kid that I got nervous beforehand, but I mean, usually I just pee my long underwear. I wouldn't throw up before every game as a peewee or whatever.
Yeah, just take a piss in the pants.
Yeah,
the pants,
exactly. Being so nervous and couldn't eat. So that was just kind of my nature, believe it or not. Everybody thinks you're, you know, outgoing guy, but when the game came to it, I was like that. So anyway, so I'd be in the bathroom and Big Daddy would be putting Vaseline on his seat and he'd look over like and I'd boxer. Be throw, yeah. And I'd be throwing up and it was violent and I'd come out of it and I felt great. I was like, and I could always hear Big Daddy going, "Boys." And my nickname was Spank and, they're boys, Spank's ready to go. And he's got the Vaseline. I'm throwing up. And he's ready to fight somebody big. I'm 5'4" and I'm throwing up before the game. And he'd go in there and go, "Spank's ready to go. Let's go, boys." And you know what? At the end of it, I don't know if I could have played any longer than the 81 games that I played. It was really weird because I didn't do it as a junior player. And in the minors, I didn't. But I think once you get to the NHL and you want to stay there and the pressure gets a little bit, it's business. And it's just a little bit, it's a lot to take in. And I just had a lump in my stomach and if I didn't throw up, I was going to throw up on my mask and that wouldn't have been any good. So,
no, that's
so
no
I did.
Fun.
That's a
no.
true story. Yeah. Yeah.
That's cool, man.
Oh yeah. Cool for you. Thanks, Jimmy. That's great.
I used to, Panger's barfing into his mask. Check it out.
You threw up going to Hull, Quebec on that bridge.
I did.
Problem.
Yeah, going over, I used to throw up about
3 a.m.
In the Oiler heydays when all those guys were winning cups and I was the number one loyal male groupie. Okay. I was the number one. Okay. I got the trophy. No one will ever take it away. And of course we become friends, but I would barf about, I don't know, maybe 9 hours after the game ended. I don't know, about 7 in the morning, I guess that would probably be my barfing time. I want to ask you, Panger, because you were really good. You stuck it out. Like you said, you'd mentioned, you know, you played 3 years in the minors. You did really well as a, even younger than junior that you played in a bunch of stuff. And then you make it to the Blackhawks. I've never been able to quite appreciate, you know, goals that guys achieve and when they make the show. Rusty's brought us inside several times on, you know, his first goal and playing for Canada and that sort of stuff. And so then you get nominated. You know, you're going to be on the ballot here for Rookie of the Year. Mm-hmm. So you're going to be off and going. And then in a really sad, sad thing, 5 years later, you wreck your knee. And it boots you out of the game, right? In a practice, this is what I read today anyway. Yeah. And I almost started crying, right? When I read this thing that, you know, a guy like yourself with such a vibrant personality, such a great fucking guy with the guys in the room and all that stuff. I said, how does a guy possibly handle that after dreaming your whole life about making the NHL, you get going in the NHL, you're going good. And then that happens to you. Not to bring the whole show down, but what was that day like, Panger?
I'll bring it back up because I said to Kelly Chase one time, he had a picture in his office, and you guys know Chaser, and only Chaser has a black and white picture in his office when I first joined the Blues, and it was him fighting Wayne Van Dorp. And I looked at that picture and I said, "That's Wayne Van Dorp." And he said, "Yeah." And I said, "Swoop." And he goes, "Yep." And I go, "He ruined my career." Without batting an eye, Chaser looks at me and goes, "Don't kid yourself. He started your career."
Wow, so, that's true though.
You know, and I didn't, you know, me, I was kind of, you know, like, no, he ruined my career. Like I thought that at that point, I honestly thought, I mean, we all dream about things. I dreamt that I was going to win Vezina trophies and Stanley Cups and be in the Hall of Fame. That's all you dreamed about. I think I'm Rusty as a kid and Jimmy, even you, I mean, who doesn't dream? I think if you don't dream about that kind of stuff, well, what kind of life is it? I totally I totally was blown away that my career was done. After I was only 26 years old, I'd only played, I'd only played one game in 84, 85. I was sent back to the minors, so 3 full years. And then I made, and then I played what, 45 or 50 games. Then the next year I tore my hamstring in January 1st, Boreas Salming playing for, he might've been playing for the Wing. No, he was playing for Toronto then. Is that right, Rusty? Was he playing for Toronto then in 86?
What year?
88, 89.
He was with Detroit.
So he danced me a little bit, and I got my the heel of my skate at the stadium. I got it caught, and all I heard was a pop, and it was my right hamstring, and I've never been in more pain in my life. And I torn my MCL before that, and this was painful. So anyway, long story short, it was like, okay, that was the really major injury for me, and I was out for a month. And Keenan was the coach. So when you get injured and Keenan's your coach, he wants nothing to do with you. You do not exist. So my equipment was in the very back room, and it's a rotten feeling. Actually, it is absolutely a rotten feeling. And it was about that point, maybe earlier, when Keenan took over. He absolutely sucked the life out of me, a guy loves the game of hockey, that warms up with the tennis ball and can bat it out of the air and can roll it up. And I mean, I love the game. I love everything about the game. I tried my ass off in practice, and he sucked the life out of me. And I've since gotten over that with Mike, and I've been together with Mike, and I've had a few beers with Mike, and I'm, you know, that's all and done with. But I remember thinking at the time, how can someone take something you love and just rip it out of you? So to get to your point, it was a sad point. And during the playoffs, I came back. They needed me at some point because somebody else got hurt and I was recovering from the hamstring. I came back. Al Chevrier got on fire for us. So I was the backup goaltender. Chevrier went on a roll. We went to the conference final, and I tore my ACL in that practice before game 4 at the stadium, when Keenan thought that it was a good idea to do a crash the net drill. That's what we were doing in the playoffs in a morning skate, crash the net drill. And, you know, so sure enough, Van Dorp crashed the net, got the floppy feet. He fell right on top of me, and all 6'5", 230 pounds, smoked my ACL on my left side. So now I'm like, uh-oh. So I recovered from that. I went to the minors, and we went to Indianapolis, where I played with Bruce Cassidy again for the fifth time in my career. And we won a Turner Cup. I was only there for 2.5 months, but then in the summertime, I was coming back and get ready for camp. And I played a lot of tennis. I was training. I tore my ACL again. So my career was done. So that's where, you know, I had a chance then to kind of think of things. So it wasn't like it just happened. I really was thinking, what am I going to do? And so while I tore my ACL, Jimmy, I was lucky enough to do college hockey games. So I got into the TV already. So while I was rehabbing with the Blackhawks, Bob Pulford let me do that. So it gave me a head start on it. And so as soon as I retired and announced that I couldn't play anymore, then I was off and running, to be honest with you. I had passion for something else, and it worked out great. I honestly, Chaser was right. It worked out great. Wayne Van Dorp helped me out. I should send him another 1976 Dodge van.
And Panger, you know what I've learned too, is that not only did you not grow, but nor did your muscles. Fuck, you ripped every one of them.
Yeah. I've just
hamstring, ACL. I had a shoulder tear.
Oh my God.
Yeah. Well, when you're 5'4" and a half on 135 pounds, there's not a lot of margin for error there. You know what I mean? So,
Panger.
And our equipment wasn't very big either. So some of that stuff, like, you're just hanging on a thread, you know?
How would you do today with the equipment, Panger? You must go, you guys, you know what? You suck. We never had equipment that big. Okay. You had the leather pads that weighed about 40 pounds after every period, didn't they?
You know what, Jimmy? I love the fact that I played in the era that I played in. I love the fact that I played in every one of the old rinks. The only old one I didn't play in was the Olympia. When I played my first game in 87 at Joe Louis, I kept thinking, this place is like a hospital building. It's so, you know, there's no character to it, because we're playing in Maple Leaf Gardens in the Montreal Forum, Boston Garden. The Buffalo Odd I thought that was a great place to go play. And then the Chicago Stadium again. So I'll take the era that I played in with my old pads and cash that in any day. I couldn't play the way they play today. I know I can't. The lateral movement, the way they shoot the puck. I mean, I sit there and practice every day, guys. It's sickening. how hard every fourth liner can rip that puck 100 miles an hour if they want to. So
and
it's a little bit of a
Panger. I'm not making a joke here, but they are freaking huge now. It's like the quarterback in the NFL. Like they, it seems like if they're not 6 foot five, they're not getting drafted. I mean, they're massive.
You know, in our day, Jimmy and Rusty, they were looking for goalies. Were I mean, I'm the second smallest, so not me, but let's say Mike Vernon, Van Beesbrook. Let's go to that group of guys, 5'8" to 5'10" probably.
And Mike Palmateer.
Mike Palmateer and yeah, and that's a good one. Yeah, I love Mike Palmateer, man. We were always Mike Palmateer in street hockey, but then now they want little Samuel Girard, little defensemen that are our size and goalies that are 6'7". So it's completely reversed, which is amazing to me. I never thought that would ever happen.
I'll tell. So I started playing for Toronto after the 84 Olympics, and Palmy was our goalie, and he had really bad knees, and he had in his contract that he'd get. Then every time he played, he got the next day off. He didn't have to show up for practice. But the funniest thing I've ever seen, I think, from a goalie, can't remember who we're playing. They dumped it in, and it hopped. He skated out of his net and booted it out over center ice in the air. He booted with his pad. He booted the puck over everybody's head out of the zone. Palmy was unbelievable. Like if you had your head down and you had a breakaway, he would meet you at the blue line and poke check you.
That's unbelievable.
He was fearless and he played. If you go back and watch Panger, if you Google Panger when he was playing for Chicago and just watch how active he was in the net, the smaller goalies, I mean, they were just at that time, a lot of the goalies were obviously under 6 feet. Except for a couple, but he was so active and so excitable and fun and just great to watch. Great energy. Great energy.
Well, Rogi Vachon was my favorite. He was as acrobatic as they get.
Yeah. So. Rogi.
So that backing up for a second, that's a great attitude that you had when you kept trying, like Rusty says, you ripped every muscle in your body twice and still kept trying.
And I lost my hair too.
Well, you and I.
That was Keenan too. Again, poor Mike's just taking on the shins right here.
Yeah, Keenan. Yeah, I like Mike. I like him. Yeah, he's kind of a likable guy. But
we had fun, Jimmy, at when Gretz invited him to his nationwide tournament, and even Gretz goes, you know what? Those years are gone by. We got to look forward here. You know, we're not here for very long. I was like, that's a great attitude. Good for you.
Well, you're not alone because I remember in Vegas. Where we all hung out in the Privé? Is that what it's called? Club Privé, where we all migrated.
I've never been there before.
No, right? Yeah,
you've three steps up. Yeah.
and Mike Keenan was there, and everyone would have four or five looseners, you know, just to, you know, that was because it was
looseners. I love
8:30, right? That was my old man's expression. Let's have a couple looseners, to relax, and then you would see, like Chaser was there. Brett Hall was there. You were there, Panger, some other guys.
Chelly,
right? And all of them would sort of come in. You know, you walk into the room and I'd see you, Darren. Well, I just, you know, I'd come over and jump on your back. You know, great to see you, Rusty, right? You'd see guys come in there, glance over at Keenan and turn and walk the other way. I don't want to talk to that fucking guy. Okay. Him and Chaser almost got in a freaking brawl.
Were you guys there the night that Brian Leetch and Chelly told him the truth, like Mike. So they had Keenan on the corner of the bar and they just went, you know, they had enough drinks. They just were telling him the truth. And Keenan looked at Chelly and he goes, he's telling the truth, Mike. And he couldn't believe it. And I think he actually got teary eyed or, you know, pretty emotional, but
yeah,
I think for everybody at that time for Wayne to invite Mike, was a really nice gesture for what my Gretz went through in St. Louis. Mm-hmm. And then for players to, I think the only player in the room who really liked Mike was my brother, Jeff. My brother's got a sick mind. I mean, he's like, Jeff always just said, well, he challenges you. And then if you can't handle it, you can't play. And I'm like, oh, you are a sick bastard.
Yeah. Oh.
But I mean, the stories are legendary.
But you know, it is good that like there's so many other players that I played with that ended up going along for the great ride. Brian Noonan,
Oh yeah,
Stefan Matteau.
Smartest guy in the league.
Greg Gilbert. Trent Yanni. Who else? I'm probably missing somebody here.
God, those are big names, man.
Our good buddy, Mike Hudson, you know, actually came on board and got a good contract. And then I don't think he played a game here in St. Louis, but since he's married very well anyway, Huddy has.
Good man. Huddy, the best contract Huddy ever signed was his marriage contract.
Good man. That's a good man right there. I love that guy.
One of the Thompson kids. Cha-ching!
There you go. Yeah. Oh, cash in the bank. If it was, so when you have that terrible day, Panger, when you knew your hockey was over, you morphed into an analyst and now that's your life. Was it always going to be that, Darren? Had you thought before injury, a lot of guys, the thing about, and Rusty's always pointed this out, is you got to think of something that's going to happen after you play hockey. Cause you're not, you know, you're what's the average career?
Well, Rusty's a first round pick, and guys that are going to play for a long time. I mean, for sure. At one point I thought that, Jimmy, I was going to be, you know, I played in Milwaukee, love Milwaukee. I said after Milwaukee, I said, I could live in Milwaukee. And then I was in Saginaw. I'm like, Saginaw, I could live in Saginaw. And then I was in Halifax. I'm like, I could live in Halifax. Like, I just thought that that's what I was going to do. I was probably going to play for 10 or 12 years in the minors, probably, you know, get into hockey and management or some sort and run a minor league team. And that's kind of where I was kind of geared towards. So in fact, when I did make the Blackhawks, we were playing an exhibition game against Edmonton. My wife, Lynn, we just got married that summer. Jim Ralph was our MC, by the way, another great, funny guy. And so we and Jimmy, Ralph, and I were roommates my first year pro in Milwaukee. But anyway, I tell Lynn, she's already gone to Saginaw and she's already got us an apartment. So she's all locked in. We've got a dog. She's there. I call her and I say, remember, no cell phones or whatever. So you get the landline and dial it. And I say, you should come to this game. I'm playing against the Oilers on Sunday night, and camp's going great. I think I'm going to make this team. And, you know, Lynn, I mean, we've known each other for a long time. And she says, you know what? I think I'll keep the apartment here. The way she said it, she wasn't saying it. Yeah, but she wasn't saying it to be mean. She was saying it to be like, I know. That's, you know, that's great. You're having a good camp and that's good. But, yeah, I'll just keep it over there. She comes to the game. She takes the train from Saginaw, comes to the game. And I tell her, we're staying at a crappy old hotel at the Wurtz's own called the Bismarck. Just a brutal hotel. That's our training camp place. And I said, listen, here's the deal. Go to the game. There'll be a credential there for you or a pass. But if I give up a couple of early ones, I'll see you back at the hotel. Get out of Dodge. There'll be Canadian Club bottles thrown at me. It'll be a disaster. I end up getting a standing ovation as I'm leaving the ice. I stopped Curry on a 2-on-1. Fans go nuts. Halfway through the game, she goes, well, that seemed to work out pretty well.
How cool.
I said, yeah, it did. And I ended up making the team. So, so along the way, the ability to play in Chicago as an underdog, they love their athletes. Oh, they love their people. And so when I got to retire and get into the broadcast business, even Bob Pulford, who was so helpful for me, and so was Bill Wirtz. Bill Wirtz, he was terrific. And, but even Pulley said, Darren, he told me to retire. Larry Kelly was my agent. He said, you should retire. I talked to a couple of other guys. You should retire. I talked to Bob Pulford. He said, Darren, you should retire. When that many people tell you should retire, you know what, Jimmy, you should retire.
Right. So, right. You know? Yeah. Rusty says no one retires. They get retired. Yeah. Right.
Well, it is kind of true. Yeah. Yeah.
Gretzky retired. The rest of us didn't. I've been texting Kirk Klain and my brother Jeff. They were trying to reach me while we're doing the show, and they both said, say hi to you. And,
those are two good people there. I love your brother, obviously, you know that. But Kirky and I, for some reason, we just created a bond together.
Yeah,
and,
he's such a great guy.
He's a great guy.
He's a great guy. And I think, oh my God, I got called back in. That was my first national final, the 94 Stanley Cup final. ESPN told me they didn't need me for the final after I'd worked the whole year. And they, after game one, Kirky, I think, stopped 53 shots. They won 3-2. They called me back and they said, you got to get here for game two. This is going to be a goalie battle. And so I was able to do that. My first Stanley Cup final.
Oh, nice.
That one. Yeah.
Nice.
So What a series that was. But I love Kirky. I think he's goes down as one of the most underrated goalies in the game for me. I just love,
he was
just a big time goalie. Yeah. And he uses mirror clubs too. I think he uses these clubs too.
What are you on the payroll for those guys? What are you doing here? Showing us the clubs and all?
Yeah.
What's your handicap, by the way, Panger? I know you're, if people don't know you well enough, the one thing they will learn is that you are a really good fanatic golfer.
You have been your whole life. Yeah, no, not my whole life, because I played lacrosse and I played tennis and squash and whatever. But I got into playing hockey when all the, you know, you turn pro and everybody plays hockey. So nobody wanted to play tennis anymore. So, but I'm a 2.8 index now.
Humble brag, humble brag.
2.8.
You know what? I'm having a hard time finding money playing as a 2.8 too. I got to tell you that. So,
Panger and I played. We got to play Sherwood a few years back when they were on the road. With the announcer Kelly?
John Kelly. Yeah.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah. Yeah. What a great day that was. Just the three of us, right?
Yeah.
I think it was just the three of us. We played. It was a beautiful. Beautiful day out at Sherwood.
Is there bad days at Sherwood?
Nah, not really. Yeah. Monday, they're closed.
We sure as fuck hear enough about it from Russ. So there's not too many bad days there.
You know what we call Monday? Because we're closed. It's honeydews.
Oh, yeah.
Honeydew this and honeydew that.
Yeah. Get the list ready. Yeah. Yep.
I said the hockey season's going to start here, Panger, in a couple of days. And so I do vids for our Suspendables podcast. Now, twalking, Rusty, is what I'm doing. Walking and talking with Jungle. And I was doing one last night saying, here's the deal. Because a friend of mine used to love to go to the racetrack. And yet it would piss his wife off, you know. And yet he was kind of hooked on it. And he'd come home and, you know, and finally what he did was he'd won $400 or $500. And he threw $100 on the kitchen counter that night. She was in bed and left a note for her saying, honey, here you go. Just a free $100. And so she loved it and was, you know, wanted him to go to the racetrack all the time, thinking she'd get a C note. So one of my friends said, you're going to start Wednesday. This is a compressed schedule, 56 games. There's back to backs. It's going to be like nothing's ever been done like this in the NHL before. And you're going to sit down to watch the game. Your wife's going to come screaming and go, oh, no, don't tell me fucking hockey is starting again. And just hand them the $100. Rusty, and you'll be able to watch all the games you want. So
this Panger, this is why he is living alone, divorced, and single. These kind of comments.
That was Exhibit A right there.
Yeah, that's Exhibit A.
Yeah, but I do remember the one thing. Okay, I'll go back to the hundreds and stuff. And the one thing about Keenan that he did great was those bonus structures of 5-game segments and goals for, goals against. And there was a cash envelope if you met all the quota. And I remember Denny Savard one time pulled me aside and he said, Spank, he says, don't tell Lynn about this money. He says, this money goes in the golf bag. He says, okay, you don't tell, none of the boys tell. We don't want them knowing the extra little cash that we've got. It goes in the golf bag and it'll be there for a rainy day.
Well, what I was getting to, Panger, is your handicap's too low. You can't win cash, okay, under a 5. You can't win cash. You got to give too many shots. All the guys are 11 and 12s, this really loose handicap shit, okay, that everyone cheats on their cap. Everyone cheats on their handicap except the fanatic low handicapper.
Okay? No, especially Canadians. Canadians cheat worse.
Yeah, they're the worst.
They are. Rusty, they are, aren't they? They're like, oh, I don't know. I played last week, and I don't know. I shot like 81 or something like that. I'm like, what's your handicap?
As soon as you hear what's your handicap and someone says, you know they're lying.
Or this one here about six or seven holes in and the guy will turn to you. This happens all the time. Because I used to be a low handicapper. I'm shitty now. And they'll go like this. I just can't believe, Darren, I'm playing this well.
Yeah.
Oh, is that right? Huh? That fucking line. I can't believe I'm playing this well. Okay, great shit here, Panger. Great stuff. This is I got to give a few shout-outs, Rusty. I promise people. We got guys there. I told you there's a guy from Vladivostok. God bless this guy who's listening all the time. Dan. Alexeyanov. Am I doing that right, Panger?
Absolutely. Alexeyanov.
We got to say hi to Lauren Johnson and Jay LeDrew and Steven. I think it's Fawick, Scott Flake, Dave Jansen, Mark Skidmore. Thanks a lot. Terry Robinson, Ben Gertan, Kyle Quigley, and a few more. Sebastian. I think it's Sebastian Gray. It's my own writing. I can't read it. Tom Goudreau, Bradley McMillan. Tosh Oka, Russ, listens in every week from Japan.
Wow.
Arigato.
Hello.
And Stuart Bent and a bunch more people. One of them, Gary Galley, of course you would know Gary. Does Gary still have a gig, Panger? Is he back on air? Gals?
I would think so. Yeah.
Yeah.
Gary's one of the best, man.
He's great. One of the top guys for Hockey Night in Canada, right?
I love Gaga.
Anyway, he got into the I was doing that radio show in Ottawa, and Gary started work there for the first time in doing any sort of media, right? And he, like me, had no idea what a cough button was. It's like a mute button, Russ, okay, in a studio. And, you know, he was trying to find his way around like I was. And I think the first week he worked there, about four shows in, everyone has done it. Everyone's done it that they forget they're still on air and they think they've gone to break, to commercial. So Galley's taking phone calls and people are complaining about the sends. It was back in the days when Bonk and Hossa played there. And some moron caller phones in and goes, you know, they got to get rid of Bonk. They got to get rid of Bonk. They got to get rid of Hossa. They got to do something about those guys. Make a trip, blah, 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 all this shit, right? And Gals is going, well, maybe, you know, we got to be, you know, we got to consider something. He's trying to be soft. He's going, you know, we'll have to think about that. It's something, maybe food for thought. If we could get another call on that, that'll be great. And we'll be right back after this. And they don't go to commercial. They're still on air. And he goes, we'll be right back after this. He goes, you know what? That guy's fucking right. You got to get rid of that fat fuck and that piece of shit. He goes, yeah. Oh, no. It's unbelievable, Gary. So they're playing. What happened was they're still live, but they're playing the commercials underneath. Right. And he's talking over the commercial and all you can hear is these F bombs. And I said, I got to ask Panger, maybe nothing that severe, but you got to have a few media stories.
Well, when I first started at ESPN, Jimmy, I had a boss. I'm a big talkback talker because I'm so energetic and the play-by-play guy's doing his stuff. So often I'm talking to the producer and I'd be like, Courtnell's going down the right side. He keeps doing the same thing. That little toe drag. We need a piece of Courtnell. He's done it three times. We got to get Courtnell three times. He's doing it. And blah, blah, blah. And then a replay would come in and maybe it wasn't the right one. So when I was in my early days, I wasn't as composed as I was and I wasn't as patient, and I'd get back on talkback and I go like, what the is that? And so anyway, I'd be like, and so, you know, then you realize I'm part of a team. The talkback button goes all the way through the truck. The tape guy hears it. It's EVS guy is the guy that does the replays. I just threw everybody under the bus, you know, quickly. Anyway, my boss came up to the booth and he says, he put a piece of tape right beside this, the talk back and the whole case there. And he said, this is a $12 unit from Radio Shack. Don't let it ruin your career.
Wow. That's funny.
And never forget the way he said it. Larry Christensen is his name. And I'd be like, oh my God, you're right. Like I would always just get so excited about things. But the one time on the air, I got, you know, you have a lot of calls and some of them just go by the wayside, but there was
post-game
one that,
show, you mean that you're doing a radio
but
show?
This was actually this was on ESPN conference final. I'm working with Dave Strader. We're in Colorado, Chicago, Colorado. It's exclusive because now we're into exclusivity. And so we're doing this game and it's a good game. I mean, Chicago Chelios and, you know, they've got a good team. And it was the series that Jeremy Roenick said, what I couldn't hear, you know, it was that whole thing where his jock straps in the stands and Patrick Waugh says, I couldn't hear my two Stanley Cup rings in my ears. So it was a really intense series, you know?
Right. Right.
So we get going and we're at the old, I'm pretty sure it wasn't the new rink. It was still the old one, McNichols Arena. And I say to our producer, Bruce Connell at ESPN, I say, Brucey, I'm going to take it back from break. Cause we got replays going and we don't have much time. And Dave Strader, I give Dave Strader the old, I got to take this out of break Strades. I got this. So I go, and I'm all excited. I go, moments ago, Stefan Yell beats off Chris Chelios.
Oh no.
And I went,
beautiful Panger.
Oh my beautiful. God. And I'm telling you, Strades is laughing so hard. He's laughing so hard. He can't talk. I can't talk. We're trying to get the talk back buttons going, but we're giggling like kids. And then our producer's like, what is wrong with you guys? What are you doing? And Strader's trying to tell him what I said. He hadn't heard it. Now they're all laughing in the truck. And I'm like, ah. So every time I go into Detroit, they had a you know, one of their morning shows that was such a popular hockey show. And the Red Wings were such a, obviously, number one probably rated team in the NHL, TV ratings, everything. And every time I'd go on any of their shows, that's the first thing they'd play.
So good. Great stuff, Darren. This is fantastic, man. We really appreciate you coming on. I got to ask you then, because you're a grandfather twice, yes. Right?
That's exactly right. My daughter lives here in St. Louis, and their daughter's name's Charlie, and she's just over a year old. And that has been the saving grace of all that we're going through with COVID. We're in each other's bubbles. We have been from day one, March 11th or 12th, Jimmy, and Rusty, and we've been able to spend more quality time with this little baby girl, and she's just adorable. And then my son, who's out actually this is his country club. He's a Raritan Valley in New Jersey. He's an assistant pro there, and they have a baby girl, Evelyn, that is 6.5 months old.
Tell us, congratulations.
Thank you.
Tell us how it's going to work, Darren, with COVID up here, of course, in Canada. Yeah, game-wise, are you going to games? Are you doing it in the studio? Are you doing it from home? How is it all going to break down for you guys? And you're doing games for St. Louis, of course. Tell us, walk us through that.
Home games, we are going to Enterprise Center, going up to the booth. We've got our booth set up. We went in there for measurements, sent pictures to the NHL that they wanted to make sure that we were over 6 feet apart. And even our camera people are in our same area, and they're 8 feet apart. So everybody's just going through the protocols that they're asking. Right. Can't be down below, Jimmy. We don't go down in the main concourse at all. We don't interact with anybody. We just basically go up to a game and call the game. And then when the team goes on the road, which they leave tomorrow, for Colorado for the home opener. We go to our Fox Sports Midwest studio over there at Ballpark Village, right by Busch Stadium where the Cardinals play. And so we'll do our away games from there. And then, that's really it. We've been going to practices, which has been, it's okay. I mean, there's nobody there. Broadcasters go in a certain area. Writers go in a certain area. Everybody wears a mask. Everybody stays 6 feet apart. We're just following the protocols, and hopefully that we don't want any glitches in this. You know, I mean, nobody wants to ruin any momentum.
Right. Yeah, so you don't want to screw it up.
You got to be responsible. You know what? And for me personally, I mean, I've got to go see, I've got to be with my granddaughter. I don't want to screw things up either. So we're all just trying. It's not ideal, but whatever. This life isn't ideal right now. So we'll figure it out. We'll get back to normal again.
What about the team?
Team's good.
We got to give you a little plug here.
Team's good.
What you think's going
to
happen?
You know, they signed Mike Hoffman to a 1-year, $4 million deal. That's a nice replacement for Vlady Tarasenko. Both left-hand shots that play the right side. Hoffman's played with, keep this name Robert Thomas in mind. I'd like to hear your thoughts too as we go along here, and I'll come back on the show too, Rusty, because this Robert Thomas was a first-round pick, 20th overall. He's a stud for me. Schwartz and Hoffman are aligned, and then Shen, O'Reilly, and Perron are aligned. Torrey Krug's new on the team. And he and Parayko are together. I don't know. This is a really good team. There's probably 6 forward lines that you could put and that would match up, in the NHL. Probably have 8 defensemen at least, maybe even 9 defensemen that could fill the void. So pretty good.
That's great.
And what about your hometown? I got to ask you.
Ottawa.
The Senators
off
got
and coming.
Yeah, Ottawa. They got this kid Stützle from the German team. We got a lot of listeners from Ottawa. What's your take there?
He came out on our show. You know, my sister Sherry has Crohn's, and Sherry and I, we've done many fundraisers for Crohn's and colitis in Ottawa, and we did a Martini Madness virtual Martini Madness. And because of Andy Scott, who's one of the great agents in the game, they were able to secure Tim Stützle. He came on the show. Brady Tkachuk came on the show as well. And so Mark Mathot, that's a good Ottawa boy right there. So I like him. I follow Ottawa a lot, especially with Brady Tkachuk. I play some golf with Brady in the off season, and he's here. I think he's a gamer. Rusty, you'd love this guy. He's a captain.
I knew them when they were really young. I met them in the summer at Cam Neely's golf tournament. They're just little kids running around, and if they're anything like their dad, they're going to be just great. I mean, they're already great. They're already great players, but it's nice to hear that they're leaders, because not everyone is, not everybody's a leader.
No, they've been brought up in this game the correct way. Like we were out in Calgary a couple of years ago, and we, you know, Walt's one of our amateur scouts, big Walt, big Keith Kachuk. And so he was with us, and, you know, he was there with Matthew, and Walt set it up that the broadcasters and the trainers meet up at Joey Tomatoes. And, you know, he told Matthew, come on out and meet up with the guys. And then he stood up kind of and said, hey, Matthew, like, this is what it's all about. You know, take care of these guys. And, you know, you see that natural progression, like what Walt did with trainers, what the older guys, how they treated trainers. And then they get the next generation to treat them the right way. Give them bonus money at whatever. These guys don't make a lot of money. All those little things. These Kachuk boys, they just know what to do and how to get it done. So I'm a huge fan of Ottawa. I think they've got some great prospects. I think they drafted well. I think they're up and coming. There's no question about that for me. And I like their coach. I'll be honest. I really like their coach. I thought that was a really good pickup. And I think he's really? Got them in the right direction. Yeah, I do. Yeah.
So your grandkids are not too far away from being able to understand who their grandfather is. They're going to, when they get to 7, 8, 9, or 10 years old, they're going to find out that their dad was a very successful hockey player and an analyst. One of the greatest shows we had, Russ, was when someone weighed in and banged off 3 or 4 things when they had asked you, what's your legacy? What game are you going to tell your grandkids about? What goal, what day was biggest in your life? And so I want to ask you the same, Panger. When you think of your legacy and all the stuff you've done, when your grandkids are told by their parents, hey, your grandpa was this wicked hockey player, you know, and very successful. What stories are you going to tell them, Panger? What would be the highlights that you would sit down and say that you're most proud of and the most memorable?
That's a really hard question to reflect upon, but it's not being a player. I think being an undersized goalie and making it to the NHL will be something that we'll have to live on, because there's not going to be another 5'4.5, 135 pound goalie. So I think I've got that secured for a long time.
Yeah.
But I think more than anything, I'm really excited if I continue on in broadcasting, which I never know what, you know, you never know where your aspirations take you. But if I continue on and I have the ability to take my grandkids to a game and they get to see, you know, walking around a rink, saying hello to people, you know, having the energy to do all those little things. I think that would be one of the things that I'd be greatly excited about. I don't know. There's something about going to the rink and knowing that's your office, if you know what I mean. Huh?
Yeah.
Pang, that's a good thing.
Mine was a bar called the Sidetrack.
Jimmy?
Yes, sir.
My bet is that Panger's a GM one day. I think if you own a hockey team and you have somebody with the hockey background of a guy like Darren and they're in the game every single day and they can rattle off every player, you know, we just heard. If I was an owner today, I mean, one of the first calls I'd make is to Panger sit down and talk to him and see if he'd want to do it. Because, you know, the thing about the media is that it's kind of, if you're in Panger's position and you keep doing what you're doing, you can do it till you retire. If you take that chance and want to be a GM, you know, you can get out of the media into management, but then that might not, it doesn't always work out. So there is some risk involved, but Panger would be a great, great pick as a general manager or even a president of a hockey team somewhere down the road if he wanted to. I mean, it'd be his call, but.
What's your reaction to that, Panger?
That's a lot there, Rusty. I appreciate that. That's a lot to say. A lot of responsibility. I'm, you know what, Rusty? I'm like you. I probably listen to a lot of my good buddies. You've got a lot of them in the game. I do, and you know, I lean on those guys. I know how hard they work. If you're not willing to, Rusty, if you're not willing to work and jump into it, or have the energy, then, you know, you can't do it. But I do believe that I've got another layer of energy and that my aspirations are to do exactly what you said at one particular point. I don't think I'm done with what I'm doing in life. I think I've got more to give. And I'm thankful for a lot of my close GM friends that rely on me for just conversation or knowledge. So anyway, thank you for that, Rusty. That's a very nice thing for you to say. I appreciate it.
Nice endorsement for sure.
Thanks.
Well, Panger, this was great, man. I knew it would be fantastic. And listen, if we can ever, on a serious note, if Rusty and I, through the suspendables, if we can ever do anything for any of your charities, our listeners are getting up there all the time. The podcast is here to stay, and I couldn't think of a better role for us to play to help a great guy like you with any of Crohn's, colitis, thanks, or whatever Jimmy. Else you're involved in. Yeah. Let us know, and we'll be happy to do
appreciate
it.
Appreciate that. Thanks. Okay, and it's great catching up with both you guys.
Yeah,
and,
good to see you.
Really, really great. And let's not make it a long time again before we do this again, okay?
Love it.
Right on, Panger. Now I've got to beat you off. Okay, bud. No, what
happened? Remember, it was Stefan Yell that did that.
Oh, my God.
Yeah, thanks a lot, everyone. You've been listening to another episode and one of our all-time greats. We just put the books with Darren Pang. Thanks a million. Rusty, thank you. It was a great show, and we're going to be back each and every week with a fresh episode of The Suspendables. Take it easy, Russ.
Take it easy, bud.
The Suspendables is a weekly podcast series featuring former NHLer Russ Courtnell and host Jim Jerome. Join us for new episodes available each Wednesday morning. Follow us on Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, and YouTube. We invite you to subscribe and review or share the show with your friends and followers. Check out our website today, thesuspendables.com.